Državni izpitni center.
Maturità generale 2017. A tutti voi un cordiale saluto. Siamo all'inizio della prova d'ascolto d'inglese. Questa prova d'esame si compone di due parti, la parte A e la parte B. Per ciascuna parte ascolterete un testo e risponderete poi ad un esercizio che a esso si ricollega. Dapprima leggerete l'esercizio, poi ascolterete ciascun testo per due volte e risolverete l'esercizio durante l'ascolto. L'inizio e la fine del testo saranno indicati dal seguente segnale acustico. Scrivete le vostre risposte negli spazi appositamente previsti all'interno della prova, utilizzando la penna stilografica o la penna sfera. Scrivete in modo leggibile e ortograficamente corretto. In caso di errore, tracciate un segno sulla risposta scorretta e scrivete accanto ad essa quella corretta. Alle risposte e alle correzioni scritte in modo leggibile verranno assegnati 0 punti. Abbiate fiducia in voi stessi e nelle vostre capacità. Vi auguriamo buon lavoro. Ascoltate con attenzione. Aprite la prova d'esame.
Section A. You will hear an interview with Dame Claire Birchinger, the humanitarian worker. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
My castaway this week is the nurse and humanitarian Dame Claire Birchinger. She's worked for the Red Cross in over a dozen countries, including Sudan, Sierra Leone, Kenya, Afghanistan, Lebanon and Liberia. Amid the sort of raw human suffering that most of us find, even on the TV, virtually unbearable to witness. In fact, it was through Michael Burke's landmark news reports on the Ethiopian famine 30 years ago that she first grabbed our attention. We saw her as a young nurse surrounded by thousands of starving people and forced daily to make the truly terrible decision of choosing who to feed. Throughout the years, she's won numerous plaudits and awards, but her Florence Nightingale Medal pretty much says it all, given to honour those who've distinguished themselves in times of war, by exceptional courage and devotion to the wounded, sick or disabled. She says, "I don't just live to eat and sleep and get money to have a nice house. I have to create value. I have to do something in life." Let's talk first of all then, Claire, about this impulse to do something. For you, it has meant devoting your life to being in parts of the world where people are really suffering.
No, I think that's much too serious. That is, I just like to get up and do things rather than just... I'm not very good at sitting down reading a book, let's put it that way.
Right. I'm going to get a little bit serious with you, and you're going to have to bear with me on this, because this year is the 150th anniversary of the Geneva Convention, something that's been a sort of guiding principle for you in a very real way. Why is it important to you?
It's the one flash of humanity in all wars. So this flash of red you see is the Red Cross. And the first Geneva Convention was about the care of the sick and the wounded and prisoners, and not to shoot the nurses and doctors. And if you think about now in Syria, the Syrian Arab Red Crescent, there's been 34 nurses that have been, or volunteers that have died, and many more have been detained or have gone missing. And these are volunteers. So humanities and the Red Cross and the Geneva Conventions is just as important now as it ever was.
Well, talk about handbrake turns. I'm about to ask you to introduce a piece of music that people will not be expecting. Tell us about this first choice this morning then. What is it and why have you chosen it?
Okay, it's a teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini. In my childhood, I was brought up very much in the countryside, and during the summer holidays, we often all piled into a car. I've got two other brothers and a sister. And we travelled across Europe via Switzerland, because we've got relatives in Switzerland, down to the south of France, and spend our summer holidays on a beach and just lived in our bikinis.
Now you will hear the recording again.
My castaway this week is the nurse and humanitarian Dame Claire Birchinger. She's worked for the Red Cross in over a dozen countries, including Sudan, Sierra Leone, Kenya, Afghanistan, Lebanon and Liberia. Amid the sort of raw human suffering that most of us find, even on the TV, virtually unbearable to witness. In fact, it was through Michael Burke's landmark news reports on the Ethiopian famine 30 years ago that she first grabbed our attention. We saw her as a young nurse surrounded by thousands of starving people and forced daily to make the truly terrible decision of choosing who to feed. Throughout the years, she's won numerous plaudits and awards, but her Florence Nightingale Medal pretty much says it all, given to honour those who've distinguished themselves in times of war by exceptional courage and devotion to the wounded, sick or disabled. She says, "I don't just live to eat and sleep and get money to have a nice house. I have to create value. I have to do something in life." Let's talk first of all then, Claire, about this impulse to do something. For you, it has meant devoting your life to being in parts of the world where people are really suffering.
No, I think that's much too serious. That is, in my life, I just like to get up and do things rather than just... I'm not very good at sitting down reading a book, let's put it that way.
Right. I'm going to get a little bit serious with you, and you're going to have to bear with me on this, because this year is the 150th anniversary of the Geneva Convention, something that's been a sort of guiding principle for you in a very real way. Why is it important to you?
It's the one flash of humanity in all wars. So this flash of red you see is the Red Cross. And the first Geneva Convention was about care of the sick and the wounded and prisoners, and not to shoot the nurses and doctors. And if you think about now in Syria, the Syrian Arab Red Crescent, there's been 34 nurses that have been, or volunteers that have died, and many more have been detained or have gone missing. And these are volunteers. So humanities and the Red Cross and the Geneva Conventions is just as important now as it ever was.
Well, talk about handbrake turns. I'm about to ask you to introduce a piece of music that people will not be expecting. Tell us about this first choice this morning then. What is it and why have you chosen it?
Okay, it's a teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini. In my childhood, I was brought up very much in the countryside, and during the summer holidays, we often all piled into a car. I've got two other brothers and a sister. And we travelled across Europe via Switzerland, because we've got relatives in Switzerland, down to the south of France, and spend our summer holidays on a beach and just lived in our bikinis.
This is the end of Section A. Section B. You will hear a part of a radio program remembering the 70th anniversary of the surrender of the Japanese forces in 1945. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
Japanese forces had been in China since 1931, long before the war in Europe, having invaded Manchuria and set up a puppet state. And as part of their operations in China, the Japanese had run a series of concentration camps as a means of controlling undesirables and those who resisted occupation. But with the surrender of Japan, people who'd been held prisoner by the Japanese in China began to be released. Among them was an American, Mary Taylor. Michael Bristow has been listening to her story.
Her parents ran a Bible school in the city of Kaifeng in Henan province. When the fighting got worse, they decided to send their four children, including the seven-year-old Mary, to a boarding school on China's eastern coast, where they thought it would be safer. The Japanese were in China, but largely left the Westerners alone. Mary's mother and father remained in Kaifeng.
They chose to stay They had actually bought tickets to return to the United States, and my dad said, God didn't call me to be a missionary here just in good times. He called us to be here in good times and bad times. So they knew they were staying, even though there might be a war that would involve us.
And then in December 1941, America was drawn into the war, and Mary and her classmates were now the enemy.
The day after Pearl Harbor was attacked by the Japanese appeared on the doorstep of our school. They brought a Shinto priest to the ball field who conducted a ceremony that said this now belonged to the great emperor of Japan, and they came bringing pieces of paper with Japanese writing and gluing it on tables, chairs, pianos, desks. All of it belonged to the great emperor of Japan, and then they put armband around us, A for American, B for British, and we were not allowed to leave without wearing our armband. And they had guards at the gates. We children would watch them practicing bayonet drills to practice killing people. We called it yaw practice because they would suit up and then they'd charge at the other, which was practicing how to kill people. And we children would watch in astonishment and interest at yaw practice.
The children were now completely cut off from their parents.
There were warring armies between us on the coast where their children were. There was no way we could get together. So now here I was, not knowing, and we were not knowing from one day to the next when we would ever see our parents again.
After about a year, the Japanese decided to close many of the small internment camps, including the one at Mary's school in Chifu. The school children and their teachers were marched to a bigger camp at Weishen.
I'll never forget that day. That was the end of Western domination of China. They had crowds of Chinese along the roadside as these white people, these foreigners, were carrying whatever they could in their hand. No servants were helping them now, marching off to concentration camp, whatever they could carry. And up at the head of the line, our headmaster began singing from the Psalms, God is our refuge.
It was tougher in the new camp, but the Chifu school teachers found ways to make it bearable for the children.
I look back at Weishen with beautiful triumphs because you know what? Our teachers set up a comfortingly predictable set of rituals and traditions. Do you know how safe that makes children feel? If every day, every day, every day, it's the same way. Our teachers were geniuses.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Japanese forces had been in China since 1931, long before the war in Europe, having invaded Manchuria and set up a puppet state. And as part of their operations in China, the Japanese had run a series of concentration camps as a means of controlling undesirables and those who resisted occupation. But with the surrender of Japan, people who'd been held prisoner by the Japanese in China began to be released. Among them was an American, Mary Taylor. Michael Bristow has been listening to her story.
Her parents ran a Bible school in the city of Kaifeng in Henan province. When the fighting got worse, they decided to send their four children, including the seven-year-old Mary, to a boarding school on China's eastern coast, where they thought it would be safer. The Japanese were in China, but largely left the Westerners alone. Mary's mother and father remained in Kaifeng.
They chose to stay. They had actually bought tickets to return to the United States, and my dad said, God didn't call me to be a missionary here just in good times. He called us to be here in good times and bad times. So they knew they were staying, even though there might be a war that would involve us.
And then in December 1941, America was drawn into the war, and Mary and her classmates were now the enemy.
The day after Pearl Harbor was attacked by the Japanese appeared on the doorstep of our school. They brought a Shinto priest to the ball field who conducted a ceremony that said this now belonged to the great emperor of Japan, and they came bringing pieces of paper with Japanese writing and gluing it on tables, chairs, pianos, desks. All of it belonged to the great emperor of Japan, and then they put armband around us, A for American, B for British, and we were not allowed to leave without wearing our armband. And they had guards at the gates. We children would watch them practicing bayonet drills to practice killing people. We called it ya practice because they would suit up and then they'd charge at the other, which was practicing how to kill people, and we children would watch in astonishment and interest at ya practice.
The children were now completely cut off from their parents.
There were warring armies between us on the coast where their children were. There was no way we could get together. So now here I was, not knowing, and we were, not knowing from one day to the next when we would ever see our parents again.
After about a year, the Japanese decided to close many of the small internment camps, including the one at Mary's school in Chifu. The school children and their teachers were marched to a bigger camp at Weishen.
I'll never forget that day. That was the end of Western domination of China. They had crowds of Chinese along the roadside as these white people, these foreigners, were carrying whatever they could in their hand. No servants were helping them now, marching off to concentration camp, whatever they could carry. And up at the head of the line, our headmaster began singing from the Psalms, God is our refuge.
It was tougher in the new camp, but the Chifu school teachers found ways to make it bearable for the children.
I look back at Weishen with beautiful triumphs because you know what? Our teachers set up a comfortingly predictable set of rituals and traditions. Do you know how safe that makes children feel? If every day, every day, every day, it's the same way. Our teachers were geniuses.
This is the end of Section B.
Siamo alla conclusione della prova d'ascolto d'inglese. Smettete di scrivere. Chiudete la prova d'esame e posatela sull'urlo del banco insieme alla scheda di valutazione. Ancora un cordiale saluto.